Ancast is brought to you by Right Stuff. Check out the great deals on anime, manga, figures, and more at rightstuffanime.com. Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. We haven't had one of these in a while, so I'm very excited and honored to have these guys back on the show. It's a Funimation episode. The two guys that we used to talk to all the time, they've moved on to other pastures. But you know, an old face is certainly here. Maybe not an old face, but you know what I mean. it's Justin Rojas. Justin Rojas is here.
And I've been at this company for 7 years, so I think that counts as an old face at this point in time, right?
Sure. Well, let's say metaphorically old, not right. Literally okay. Old. He is the senior manager of social strategy and development at Funimation. You're the face of the company at this point. Let's just sure. Get down to brass tacks.
Go with that.
And we have a new guest who's never been on before. Very excited to have her on. This is Jennifer Fu. She's a brand manager. She manages titles like Free, Eternal Summer, very specifically, Boy and the Beast, the new Hosoda film, and stuff like Neptunia, Hyperdimension Neptunia, and a whole list of other stuff. And so, guys, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah.
All right, so the first thing we always ask, we always start these shows the same way. We just want to know, how is it going?
It's going. It's been really busy. This has been a crazy year for us, to be honest. Probably the busiest year. And like I just said, I've been here 7 years. This is probably the busiest year I've ever had. Not just because of conventions and all that stuff, but just the different things that we're doing and
right.
So many new initiatives and stuff like that.
Yeah, between, of course, Dragon Ball Z Resurrection F, and then a lot more convention presence and, you know, picking up all these simulcasts, this has definitely been very intense.
Well, yeah, I mean, and speaking of, like, you know, all those extra initiatives, I mean, let's run some of those down. Like, you've got all this stuff in theaters. Dragon Ball was just in theaters. Tomorrow, the first Attack on Titan movie opens here in the States. You've got the broadcast dubs, so that's new, and you're also producing that show, which is kind of a Talking Dead for your broadcast dubs called Double Talk. That's a new thing.
Yep.
What are some of the other things that like have you so busy?
So I mean, we've got all that.
Right.
Again, Jennifer mentioned we're at more conventions than we've ever been this year as well.
Really?
Okay. So that's a lot of travel. We've been working a lot more closely with the different partners. I don't know if you've seen the stuff we've been doing with Hot Topic on the licensing side. That's been a big thing for us as well. It's just a whole lot, and our streaming service is a big push for us, and that's been growing super rapidly this year, especially with the new apps coming out on Xbox and PlayStation, and you know, across the board. So that just adding on top of everything else that's going on, and our company's been growing as well. We've been getting a lot more people into the company, and you know, we've had some really good successes this year, and we have got some really interesting things happening for next year as well.
All right. Excellent. Yeah, that Hot Topic stuff, man, like, okay, I don't shop there. My fiance shops there. I swear, that's the truth. your stuff is like, it's like wall-to-wall Funimation in there. Like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, the sheer amount of, like, Tokyo Ghoul tchotchkes that are in Hot Topic now is a little stunning. Like, it's kind of amazing. They have like an entire Attack on Titan section. It's crazy in there.
You've got, I mean, basically you walk in there and it's a wall of Titan, it's a wall of like Ghoul.
Free.
Yeah, a wall of like Free and boys with their shirts off.
Right.
And it's a smattering of whatever
Black
else.
Butler,
yeah,
Black Butler is still really popular at Hot Topic.
I feel like there's more, yeah, Black Butler for sure. I feel like there is more anime stuff in Hot Topic now than there was during the bubble. During like the mid 2000s,
I'd say that's accurate.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, like you know, walking into a Suncoast, there would be like that little section of like anime figures, but Hot Topic is like a third anime now.
I mean, we're taking over like Star Wars and stuff. You know, it's crazy to see just all this anime with Star Wars and like Nintendo, like Mario stuff. Like it's Hot Topic is such a geek hub of, I guess you'd say fashion, right? Geek fashion lifestyle, hub now, lifestyle, I guess, hub. Yeah. So much different than it was, I mean, even a year ago.
Yeah, it's great. Take a
So let's talk about some successes. We always sort of want to know what your best sellers are. I mean, the obvious answers are Titan and Dragon Ball. Dragon Ball, of course, being the big outlier, but, you know, there's the obvious stuff. But what so far this year has been a success, like a surprise when it comes to sales?
Well, I mean, yeah, like you said, we've got our ones that are no-brainers. Dragon Ball continues to sell, you know, especially with Resurrection F coming up on right. home video on, 9th on HD Digital and then 20th of October, Blu-ray DVD. So that's like a huge thing. But then, you know, Tokyo Ghoul came out this year. So that just released home video-wise last week.
Right. It's already doing amazing.
So... Again, but that's one that's been, it's always performed well from the streaming side to a home video side. It's been really popular. You'll see it, you know, people cosplaying that stuff. Yeah. Full Metal Alchemist, actually. So we just re-released the original series on Blu-ray. And so that's been doing really well as well. And then even some older titles. When I say older, I mean, those are kind of older, I guess you'd say, for Full Metal. But like, you know, Akira continues to sell. Wolf Children still going strong, especially with the new... You know, a Soda movie, Boy and Beast coming up. But there are some kind of outliers, too, that are not as expected. I mean, we've got your fan service titles like Freezing Vibration. Mm-hmm.
That one is selling really well. It's one of our top performing titles for this past, I guess, 6 months or so.
Yeah. Space Dandy, I mean, great show, great pedigree on that show. So, you know, expected to do well. I think Jen's been working on one, as we mentioned earlier, that was more or less a surprise hit.
Yeah, so Hyperdimension Neptunia, which I think comes as a surprise to a lot of people, but that one has been doing very well. Of course, when it was first simulcasting, you know, there have been all these games out, but I think that since then, with more games coming out, and also the fact that we brought back the original voice cast for that, it's been doing really well. It sells really great at conventions, especially.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Some other stuff that's old and new kind of combined. I mean, you got 009 Re-Cyborg.
Oh, yeah. The new movie for that came out, I guess it was at this point 2 months ago. So it's the 2012 reboot movie of, well, not reboot, it's, I guess, a continuation, but a new movie of the original Cyborg 009, now directed by the director who did Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. And that one has been selling really well in brick-and-mortar retail and in conventions and stuff as well.
Yeah, I definitely think that one's hitting kind of like a nostalgia audience. They're like, oh, I remember this. Like, yeah. I recognize this. I didn't even I think a lot of it is, I didn't even realize there was a new
yeah.
movie,
mm-hmm.
but now that I see it in, like, visually in my space, like, I will totally pick that up.
See, that's so shocking to me, because historically, I don't think it's as though Cyborg 009 has been, like, a top seller in the U.S. There was a version of it, I think, that ran on Toonami, like, once, or Adult Swim.
Right,
like,
and that's
years,
why it's been
ago.
such a surprise for us, really.
Yeah, really. That's that's a stunner. No way. I would have when you licensed that, I was like, really? Okay.
I think at the same time, people are also seeing, you know, they're seeing the cover of it in retail spaces, for example, and they're like, oh, I don't know what this is, and they read it. They look at the back end, they see, you know, there's a lot of really amazing people who worked on it, and then that's what sort of gets them to pick it up. So I think it's also mm-hmm. that as well.
Plus, it's yeah. a movie, not like a show. You know?
Yeah, it's easy to pick up. It's a low investment when it comes to picking up a series, you know, a little bit.
And I mean, Production IG and again, Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, I think that's also
selling it,
compelling
yeah.
a lot of people to pick it up and try it.
Right.
So on the streaming side, actually, we've had some pretty surprise hits as well.
Yeah. So for this season specifically, Overlord has been has done incredibly, and I think that this one's pretty interesting because, I mean, it's a great show, great writing, but a lot of people weren't really aware of it before the simulcast started, so, you know, we weren't seeing that much fan buzz beforehand, but I think that just shows that, you know, the content itself is what's making mm-hmm. it popular, which, I mean, is the case all the time.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of content, if you talk about Shimonetta, there's some content in that one that really is leading that show to becoming a fan favorite, yeah, as you'd say, right?
I'm actually the brand manager on Shimonetta as well, and I think a lot of the episodes have, like episode 4, for example, they'll have these moments that are totally shocking, and they get people, you know, really excited or surprised or things, and they'll go and tell their friends, and oh my God, you have to watch this latest episode.
Very meme-worthy show, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, it's great word of mouth on that one. we can't stop talking about it in the office either. Like, whenever a new episode comes out and something crazy happens, we're just like, oh my God, I can't believe, did you see such and such?
Yeah, anytime anybody gives anybody else some cookies at the office, it always becomes a topic of conversation.
Right. Yeah. Well, maybe HR needs to hear about this one. well, that's interesting. Okay, so from our perspective, Shimonetta started out as this big thing. It was really hyped up and everything. And then I think once it became clear that the show was not particularly taking a political stance, I mean, it sort of is, but it's not really political commentary, even though it kind of plays at being that at first. Maybe that's better for you, that ultimately it's just kind of a sex gag show and less political than it at first appears.
I guess I don't really see it either way, like, that being a factor either way, I guess. Really? You know, it's still just really entertaining and fun. If it has a message, that's cool, you know?
Yeah, sure. all right, any other streaming, any other surprises streaming? I know summer seemed a little depressed from spring and winter in terms of, like, shows people were really excited about.
I would say Snow White with the Red Hair has been doing really great, and, you know, a lot of times... like there aren't very many shoujo titles that come out in a season, but that one's been doing very strongly. Of course, some of the, I guess, more obvious ones, things like Prison School and Gangsta, those
are doing great. I mean, there's a ton of stuff that's doing very well. And it's interesting to see how the viewership is from the simulcast to the broadcast dubs as well.
Right.
So, you know, we briefly mentioned that's a new thing we've been doing this past year, and we're actually seeing some pretty good... kind of return on the broadcast dubs, even from the people that originally watched the subtitled simulcast are tuning back in to watch the broadcast dubs. And if you guys don't know what broadcast dubs are, these are these new dubs we're doing that are about, give or take, 4 to 6 weeks dubbed and broadcast based on the broadcast materials and upload to our site and streamed. So you're getting English dubs faster than ever. It's kind of a crazy task that I didn't think we'd ever be able to really do that personally, and I'm amazed that this is a thing that we've been doing this year, and it's been doing pretty well for us. You know, we're kind of seeing a good ratio of simulcast views to the broadcast of views.
Yeah, it's just great that we can reach more audiences that way. You know, otherwise people who primarily are interested in dubs, they have to wait a really long time. But then we're also seeing, of course, there are a lot of people that overlap on which ones they like to watch.
Mm-hmm.
For the broadcast dubs, are you finding that, because you're still kind of doing like a ton of these, like it's a lot, it's no small number, are you finding, like, so moving forward, like into the fall, is the plan to expand further, or are you curating even more and it's like, okay, it's only really worth doing this on these 5 shows?
Yeah, I think that's something we're kind of figuring out as we move along. So we, you know, we did, I think, 2 initially,
right?
Then we jumped to 10 and kind of did really test ourselves internally as well to see what we could actually accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, yeah, we're going to be more strategic on it, figuring out what the real value is and what people want to see. And a lot of it's based on, you know, the consumer feedback and stuff like that.
Go ahead. Do you start planning which shows you're potentially going to, I would imagine you start planning well in advance of the season, which shows potentially might get broadcast dubs. And then is that sort of how the pipeline works? So, like, months ahead of time, when you're sort of getting early ideas of what these shows are like and what might be a success, you're sort of picking what would necessarily go to broadcast dub, and then once you start getting actual viewership in, that's when the final call is made?
That's usually how it works. Of course, there are a lot of different circumstances with all of these, so it's a little hard for us to make a blanket statement on everything, but I would say that that's generally...
Yeah, it can be very case by case, especially, you know, based on material delivery and all that stuff, making sure you're able to meet timelines and all that as well. So everything has its own, you know, special story. But yeah, we're definitely looking in advance to see what would resonate with a dub audience enough to invest doing a broadcast dub.
Is the potential there for something gets a broadcast dub and then doesn't come out on Blu-ray? Could that happen?
I can't think of any instance where that could happen.
Yeah, I mean, never say never, but I don't think that's a part of our plan necessarily. Yeah.
Unless the broadcast dub, like, just completely fell on its face, and you're like, okay, we don't know what happened here. Like, that would be sort of like a freak, like, anomaly thing.
You know, I would think it would end up becoming more of some sort of complication or something else from a different perspective rather than the quality of the show. I think if we're investing on that end, I think we would probably go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I would think as well.
But, you know, again,
we've never had that situation come up, so I guess it's a little hard to answer.
So here's another question about the broadcast dubs. For the spring, you guys did the melancholy of... what's her face? The Haru Suzumiya ripoff. The ripoff. Spinoff. Not a ripoff. Spinoff. I gotta rephrase that. You did the simuldub for the spinoff of Haruhi Suzumiya. I guess maybe that's even a better title for the show. which you did in California, I understand, with the original cast. Like, you got the original dub cast of Haruhi Suzumiya back to do that show. The reason that everybody kind of knows that broadcast dubs are doable for Funimation is because you have all this stuff in-house, so it doesn't cost you $1 billion to do those dubs. You have those resources in-house. But for Haruhi, you were outsourcing it, which has to have been much more expensive. And I have to wonder, like, based on that experiment, is that going to be a concern moving, like, okay, well, maybe this wasn't worth it, or... I don't know. Was that such a unique circumstance where it's like, well, we're probably not going to be facing those circumstances very often? Like, I'm just wondering if that, because that must have cost more than your.
Yeah, I think you're kind of on the right track there. Like, yes, it is a special circumstance because it's a, you know, given the series and being a spinoff and having a lot of the same characters and all that, not something we typically run into with a lot of the stuff coming out. So, you know, again, I think spring was a big test for a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Seeing if that was even possible and, you know, working with the people in LA to make that happen. Yeah, you're going to have some additional costs just because of, you know, talent and time and all that. Yeah, I mean, I think if the opportunity came up and the show warranted the time and effort to make that happen again, I think we would do it again.
Yeah, and I think it goes without saying, but if we are seeing that the views for things like that, you know, are successful, then that gives us more reason to try things like that again in the future.
And also, you know, the broadcast dubs are early dubs that aren't necessarily the final, but a lot of that material will be used for the final dub at a point. So, you know, while we're saying we're spending all this money to get it dubbed up front, a lot of that's going to be money we're going to be more or less saving down the line.
Right.
Because, you know, it's...
Because it's not like you wouldn't put that show out on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, it's a numbers game at one
right,
point.
Right, it all evens out. Yeah, it's just accounting at that point. All right, interesting. So, basically, if there's another... there's an Ikki Tozen show, like, down the road, like, next year, they're like, let's do this again, and you guys snap it up, potentially that would be... That could be, like, the next foreseeable instance of you winding up having to use LA Studios.
Yeah, it's always possible.
Sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Okay. So
with that. So I wanted to add to, with that all going on, Double Talk's been a good platform to promote these broadcast dubs as well. So that's kind of tying back into that. And I think we want to do more with the show that gets the community more involved with kind of these dubs and also with us as a company. So
yeah, that's what I was going to ask next. So you've got Double Talk, which is sort of your Talking Dead style show that's on after your broadcast dubs, which is on Wednesdays, right, on Twitch. So I'm wondering. This question is totally going to come across as though I am being insulting. I swear it's not that. Who is that show for? Like, who are you trying to reach with Double Talk?
Now, that's a good question. And that's, again, it's kind of an experimental thing we've been doing this past year as well. A lot of new things, right? So we want to see who's going to be receptive to it. One of the reasons we're doing it on Twitch is to open it up to that Twitch audience as well to see where the crossover is with those gamers that are streaming and watching people stream games there. Mm-hmm. Working with Screw Attack and our good friends over there, and Chad being one of the co-hosts, kind of opening up to that market as well, because, you know, one of the reasons we are doing dubs is to open it up to an audience that could potentially be more casual, that are interested in anime, but maybe aren't the type that's going to watch, you know, the latest season of all the simulcasts all at once. but also catering to our fans that are, you know, big passionate Funimation dub fans. So really kind of creating a venue where we all mix and mingle together and then see kind of who sticks. And then we'll, you know, again, the whole show is based on fan feedback as well. So we encourage fans to let us know what they want to see in the show. And you know, if we're working on a lot of new changes for the show, incorporating new things. I mean, right when we started, it was a, I guess you could say there were lower resources dedicated to be doing that. That was kind of a thing a group of us were doing on the side of our regular jobs here. And so now we've been doing pretty well, and we actually have over 650,000 views on Twitch for the show. So
nice.
It's warranting more, you know, more resources and time to be put into it. And I think the audience could really be its own audience at this point in time, where it's not even just only about dubs and watching anime, but really kind of creating a more of a community around what we're doing as a company and kind of anime lifestyle.
The anime lifestyle. What is that lifestyle exactly? What does someone who's living the anime lifestyle do, Justin?
It's a good question. You know, as we all know, there are lots of different anime fans. Yes. There's not just the one anime fan who likes anime in general. I mean, you've got your different people who like your shonen titles and your shoujo and your fan service and all that good stuff. And I think there's a lot of common threads between these different types of people. And I think a lot of it is just kind of acceptance, honestly, that no matter what type of content you like, we encourage you to express yourself and be open about liking these things. So I think the anime lifestyle, you know, if you could tell me if you're an anime fan and you've never played a video game in your life, I would be very surprised.
Right.
Right. If you probably don't have any sort of geek merchandise of any sort on you, or that you have, if you've never bought, not necessarily something from Hot Topic, but if you've never got like a keychain or anime wall scroll or anything ever, you know, I think it's pretty fair to say that most people have something. Zelda t-shirt, you know, anything, sure. Right?
Yeah, it's kind of like people who go to conventions. Like, mm-hmm. That's sort of, they feel like that's the con goer. That's kind of the audience you're talking about, maybe.
And there's an interesting, you know, sect of people who have never gone to a convention but want to experience kind of that community feel and want to see the people in the community without going to a convention. They can be very expensive. So using DoubleTalk is kind of an interactive live platform that we want people to experience with us at Funimation. If they can't go to a Funimation panel, if they can't come by a booth and they want to kind of talk with us in real time, like that's an opportunity to do that.
So, guy watches streaming anime, occasionally buys a DVD, he bought Metal Gear Solid, and he's excited to play it, and he really wants to see the new Star Wars movie. Like, that's your guy.
That sounds like me.
Okay, yeah.
So, that's a guy, yeah, right?
And then,
give us another guy, Jen.
Does it have to be a guy?
By guy, I mean person. So.
Yeah, sure. I mean, on the flip side, it could be, I guess I'll just describe someone closer to me, you know, someone who watches tons of anime, maybe even, you know, watches some sub, some dub, cosplays, draws fan art, goes on Ani Twitter and gets into arguments with other people about who best boy is, not saying that I do that ever. You know, someone like that, too, is someone that you can reach with.
See, I think you just described a weeb. See, that's weeb. And he's talking about the anime lifestyle, right? So, like, more casual, like, a little more casual.
I think
right?
They're...
It's everyone, but, it, I mean, that's I think everyone. That You're getting anime both. Lifestyle is just someone who, you know, when they turn off the anime, they don't... That's not where their experience with anime stops, right?
Right.
So, it's just sure, someone yeah. who's involved mm-hmm. with it in things that have to do with their normal lives, I guess.
Yeah.
Aside from just watching the show itself.
No, I think that you just have those two... those two groups of people, and they sort of combine to make the audience for what you're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think there's more. I mean, there's tons
sure.
of different ones,
yeah.
right?
Of course.
But these, both of these right here that we discussed are basically myself and Jen.
Yeah.
So we're just speaking from personal experience.
Right.
But there's tons of other people, even within the Funimation office, that are different types of anime fans that have different types of habits. You know, somebody's way more of the cosplayer, but maybe isn't even the type that you know, streams all the anime. Maybe they just like that cosplay lifestyle more, but they're still integrated and accepted within the anime community. And so, like, they have their handful of favorite titles. They might not be streaming every new show as it's coming out, but they definitely like to participate, you know, collectively as a community.
Yeah, and that participation is crucial to Double Talk, right? That's sort of what that is. That's a way of engaging them further. So, yeah, no, that makes sense. I understand now. I get it.
And again, what we're doing right now is not necessarily the only thing we're going to be doing. I'm personally delving in more into, you know, expanding on our Twitch presence and live streaming in general. You know, we've been doing a lot of stuff with our YouTube channel as well, kind of optimizing it to make it more of a place of that people can find anime content, not just watch, you know, trailers and stuff. And we want people to be able to experience really anime with us, and we want to be everywhere they are so that it makes sense and we're not, like, forcefully inserting ourselves into things. We want to be part of the community.
Right. So here's what you do. You pay Jennifer to live stream the Hyperdimension Neptunia games on Twitch while promoting the show, see? So she does, like, a Let's Play.
I'm not saying we haven't talked about that. No. The problem is finding all the time to do it. Yeah. It's the challenge.
My invoice for my consulting session that I just did is in the mail. all right. So let's talk about the theater, because you guys have a lot of stuff in movie theaters this year, and that's exciting. And it's some incredible success. This Dragon Ball movie that just came out cracked the top 10 all-time anime movies released in the U.S. That's a big deal, so congratulations.
Yep, we're up there with the Miyazaki movies and Pokemon. And
yeah,
Digimon.
I think you somehow managed to beat Miyazaki's, like...
Yeah, we bumped Howl's Moving... Wait, which one was it?
I don't remember.
We bumped
Rises.
One of the Castle ones, I think. I'm pretty sure.
I think you managed to beat Wind Rises and Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah, that's right.
Which isn't a surprise, given what you're working with. Dragon Ball is going to be, of course, more interesting to people than
Well, we
got to
put
the Wind Rises.
This way. We are the only independent studio that broke the top 10. Also, they had... Yeah. Like Hollywood backing when they did those things. Basically.
That's Disney. Also, yeah, that's Disney. Mm-hmm.
And also really long, much longer theatrical runs.
It's true.
Yeah,
right.
That's a big thing.
If you counted the amount of theaters and the amount of days that those movies were available, much, much higher than what we did for Dragon Ball Z. So
with Dragon Ball, since you had this success and you are an independent studio, I would imagine that is one of the things that's preventing you from just doing a normal theatrical release where... This movie comes out on Friday, and it will be at your theater for as long as that theater wants to play it. I would imagine, like, your status as an independent and the fact that you're not working directly with a distributor like Paramount or something like that, maybe that's that's kind of the barrier for that?
So the barrier, it's a bit tricky because, a lot of it is the strategy we also had behind this movie. Again, when you do a release that is... as wide distribution as you're saying, that doesn't mean it's going to be necessarily a success.
Right.
And so I think strategically what we did and we saw success with Battle of Gods last year as well is doing this event style release.
Right.
Where, a lot of it was based on advanced ticket sales.
Right.
And that's a huge deal for us. And a lot of it has to do with empowering the fans also to be able to show their support for anime in the theaters. I mean, we've seen anime hit theaters here and there, right? And whatever it was back in the day, and not everything has been that successful, obviously.
Right, yeah.
So being able to kind of get the fans on board before it even hit the theaters was a huge deal. And creating that kind of environment where you went to the movie theater and you knew a bunch of your friends or people that liked whatever you liked were going to be there. Again, building that community was a really big part of it. If you've ever attended a Dragon Ball Z like movie screening at one of these random theaters in wherever it might be, it's weird. It's like you went to an anime convention for a couple hours and then you left.
Yeah, like people cosplay. It's basically like an event. But I think that with pre-sales, especially things like that, when there's that much demand that early, that really gets a lot of the theaters and their exhibitors' attention. So then they start thinking, you know, not just for Dragon Ball Z, but like that anime in general, that there's a market for that in theaters. So like we're definitely relying a lot on fan support for that. And it's been really great.
Well, back in the day, I mean, Viz used to do these, like, Fathom events where they would show, like, 4 episodes of something, and those things always had very limited success. And they were dealing with, like, Naruto. Mm-hmm. You know, that was, like, one screening only, a Fathom event on, like, a Thursday night they would show a Naruto movie. And from what I understand, like, those did okay. But you guys are, like, blowing the doors off of this stuff with this Dragon Ball, and I think the strategy really, that must be it. The fact that you're creating an event around this one or two days, like, limited release thing.
Even for Dragon Ball this time, we had almost 7 days? Almost, man, I'm trying to remember. I think last time it was 4 days. This one was like 7 or 8 or something.
I don't remember either, but...
Some theaters extended. And that was a big thing. So when theaters saw that pre-ticket or advanced ticket sales were happening, they would be like, oh, well, we sold out this theater. Let's add on another screening. So that also helped widen the release by the fans, you know, putting their commitment up front so that the theaters were comfortable with like bumping whatever other movie they had in the other theater and be like, no, let's do another Dragon Ball Z screening. So that helped a whole lot. And the theaters noticed, I mean, even the big studios noticed. They're like, how did you guys pull like an $8 million box office release with like only whatever, 8 days? And like, that's crazy. Our per theater average for Dragon Ball Z was actually number one.
Right.
During the run. So you'd have, I mean, what was the other movies that were showing at that point in time?
I can't remember either.
Fantastic Four, but we don't need to talk about that.
Yeah, it's early August, so it was kind of the doldrums.
Yeah.
You were up against.
So it's crazy. I mean, even, what, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to remember. It feels like all a blur now.
It was the end of summer, kind of like stuff that was still playing. So Ant-Man, and then you were up against like Straight Outta Compton and stuff like that. So.
That's right. So, yeah, we're expecting, you know, kind of to continue that momentum with Attack on Titan, the live-action movies Part 1 and Part 2. Yeah, like you said, actually, Part 1, I think, comes out today, the 30th.
Right.
It's going to be 30th. I forget exactly the rest of the days. And then Part 2 hits October 20th. So, I mean, again, we really encourage fans to get these advanced ticket sales done so that, one, they don't miss out. Because I've had people tweeting us, be like, oh, I went to the movie theater, I didn't buy my tickets yet, I just thought I could get it when I got there, and it was sold out. I'm like, yeah, that happens. So you need to make sure you're buying them in advance, and again, that'll hopefully help more theaters do more showings as well.
So for the Attack on Titan film, we, like, Hope and I loved it. We gave it an A, or Hope gave it an A on the site. I agreed with her opinion. Loved it. Thought it was a really, like, we weren't expecting a horror movie, but we got a horror movie, and we really thought it was unique and cool. Like, it's a flawed movie. Like, it's got some problems, but we thought the imagery on screen sort of made up for the fact, oh, we also are not purists and weren't expecting, like, this has to be exactly like the show or whatever. No, we want a new experience. I don't want the exact thing I've already seen before. But we are not typical for anime fans. Are you nervous at all about the reaction to it? Because the reaction is kind of overwhelmingly not particularly positive. Like, people are really taking it apart. And surely, after seeing it, you must have thought, boy, this is not what the fans were expecting.
Well, like, I mean, so how do you feel about it? We've basically done, I don't know if you would call it a focus test at this point, but, I mean, we had our premiere of it in L.A., and the reception there was overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, I was there for that.
Of course. I should remember that part. But, you know, people there were really excited for it, and we've been seeing on social media the people who went to that posting about it, and they loved it for a lot of the same reasons that you guys did. And I think it's important to know, yes, it is not exactly the same, but it's also being overseen by Isayama, so there's that to it as well.
I think there's a lot to be said about the theatrical experience for this movie as well.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people who are commenting about it maybe watched it in another form or fashion, which is not necessarily a way you should be watching it.
That must be disappointing, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that must be so very disappointing.
We're bringing it to you in a timely manner.
Yeah, as fast as you can, really.
Yeah, in the format that it should be watched. And that's the thing, I think I've watched it both in theater and out of theater. The in-theater experience with a movie, it's a Japanese horror monster movie. And if you're seeing that on a big screen, it's a completely different experience than watching it on a computer screen or a TV monitor, like, in a small room.
Yeah, or on your phone. Like, I can't even imagine how much that movie must be ruined, because the impact is all in the images of the crazy tokusatsu stuff they did with the Titans, the mm-hmm. effects and stuff. That's what's amazing about that movie, and it the impact is in a theater. It's not really on your computer monitor, you know. Like, that's where the impact is. So I think you're absolutely right that it is a very different theatrical experience, especially if the sound is, like, really loud. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how to watch that movie. So, yeah,
I remember, fun story from the premiere, when we started the movie, the director was there, and he was like, hey, it's not loud enough. Like, make sure the sound is, like, up as much as possible. Because exactly, like you're saying, you want that experience.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was, like, on the edge of my seat at the end of the initial attack. I was like, holy shit, what are we watching? That just like, ripped my stomach out. That was amazing.
Yeah,
like,
it's so gory.
Yeah.
That's the thing I don't think people realize also, that, like, this is way gorier than the anime ever was.
I had to have someone hold my hand, actually, in some parts, and I was kind of screaming.
Well, we can't wait to see part two. That's in a couple weeks, I think.
October 20th. So the advanced ticket sales are going on right now. So, again, if you're listening to this, you want to see the movies, I definitely encourage you to get your tickets in advance so that you are guaranteed a seat. Because, again, you don't want to be that guy that walks up to the theater who drove all the way to the one theater that's showing it, and then it's like, oh, I just thought I was going to get a ticket when I got here. And they're like, no, sold out. Sucks for you.
Yeah, so, well, good luck with that. I think that movie deserves to be looked at by people who are making horror films now, because it has the really unique thing of having... It's a horror movie that has imagery in it you have not seen before in other horror movies, which, like, name a horror movie that has something in it you've never seen before.
That's pretty crazy.
It never happens. So, yeah,
I think with the Titans, and the way that, again, with the effects, the tokusatsu stuff, they hit this uncanny valley of the people, of the Titans being too close to people, but not quite, and it's just weird and makes you uncomfortable.
It makes it way creepier.
Yeah, it's really, really creepy. Just thinking about it gives me the creeps. So good luck with that. So you've got The Boy and the Beast. That's going to be sort of your next theatrical thing, right?
Actually, Ghost in the Shell before
Ghost
that.
In the Shell. Mm-hmm. Okay. When can people maybe expect to see that?
So Ghost in the Shell is going to be hitting theaters November 10th, 11th, and 16th.
Okay.
Again, it's going to be this event style theatrical, and again, we're going to encourage you guys to do advance ticket sale or buy advance tickets,
right,
so that, again, supporting the theaters, supporting the movie in theaters, maybe potentially extending the release and all that good stuff.
And just to clarify, this is Ghost in the Shell, the new movie, obviously.
Arise.
Yes,
series.
It's not the it's not the original. I mean, that probably went without saying, but just to clarify.
Yeah, it's a Ghost in the Shell movie that is set in the Arise world, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. Okay.
And then Boy and the Beast after that. So Winter, and then Psycho Pass in 2016.
Okay, yeah. A lot of people asking about that Psycho Pass movie. People really want to see that, I think. Especially because the second season, some people felt like, this isn't really what I wanted. So and since the movie's written by Ribucci, that's what they're really waiting for.
Yeah, and it continues. So it's definitely a plot point to the series.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to ask about was a little bit of demographic information. If you have any further knowledge on the Funimation audience and, like, who is watching what, do you have, like, maybe a gender breakdown, like percentages of your audience that's female versus male?
Well, we haven't, I guess, looked up in terms of analytics recently on this, but we definitely know. I mean, if you just go to any anime convention, you see the gender split is pretty even. I think there was even a report recently that mm-hmm. some cons are actually more female than male.
Right.
But we're seeing, you know, like I said earlier, a lot of these shoujo brands. I mean, not to say that the people who watch shoujo anime are only women, of course. Like, a lot of people like a lot of different things, but a lot of things like Snow White with the red hair, that one's doing really well. And we're picking up more titles that are sort of broader audiences. So we got our first BL title, Junjo Romantica. So that was just this last season, and things like that. We're able to hit a lot of people that maybe may not have come to the Funimation streaming service before because of that. So that's been really cool.
Yeah, and I think we're kind of echoing what's going on just kind of across the board in the anime industry with our streaming, because we are picking up a broader portfolio of titles than just having all shonen action titles, you know. So we're seeing it reflected in the demographics of people who like those types of genres.
And even things like gender aside, things like Seiyu's Life, which is very, you know, a hardcore look into how anime voice acting occurs in Japan. I think that's an audience that, you know, is I think a little more specific and a little more different. And so we're picking up a lot more shows like that as well. That's just making it broad because we're understanding, you know, people who like anime, they like a lot of different things.
Right. Okay. And I mean, in terms of like age, is there, everyone just assumes it's teenagers and college kids watching this stuff. Is that,
that's pretty accurate.
Holding true? Like, yeah. Okay.
Well, there's still a lot of people who are older than young adults who are still into anime as well. So yeah, we get viewers from those older demographics as well. And also of course some younger, well, I mean, they're still teenagers.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that's hard to track in regards to a streaming service because you don't know who's really the one watching.
Right.
Even if the account was created by X person, you know, Z and Y could be anybody. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like Netflix, like it's all the moms bought the Netflix account, but all the kids are watching. So it's like hard to really pinpoint that. But I mean, I think with the expansion of our apps for the streaming service, you know, on PS3, PS4, Xbox 360 and Xbox One now and across the consoles, that's definitely opening up the service to be widely used with those demographics that have consoles. And consoles are definitely like our largest, you know, kind of platform to get streamer or people streaming video on. And so opening up that availability has increased and that demographic to flood to our streaming service. So I think it's a really good place to be, honestly. Again, we were talking earlier, this quote-unquote anime lifestyle that so many of us play video games and use our video game consoles as entertainment systems. So that could eventually just, I mean, as those consoles and the games that are coming out of the various consoles shift their demographics, we could see our demographics potentially being shifted as well.
Right. Now, so I'm curious, the audience for streaming, like your total number, like the total number of people watching streaming on Funimation.com, have you noticed that over time, regardless of the, you know, supposed or perceived strength of the season, you know, everyone says like, well, this winter was good, but spring was crap and summer wasn't that great, or spring was great and summer was not that good or whatever. Mm-hmm. Regardless of that, are you seeing like in general just growth? Like you're only seeing that audience for the streaming stuff grow over time?
Oh, for sure. We're seeing a lot of growth for us in particular. And I think a lot of it is due to the consoles, you know, and making it more available.
Right.
Also content, definitely.
But content. I mean,
do you think, you think the content's getting better, or you think just more people are tuned into it now?
I think it's a sort of a positive feedback loop. You know, we're getting more content, we're getting more relevant content, and we've been having a lot of hits, especially this year. There's just been a lot of titles that we've acquired that have done really well on streaming, and that's sort of getting people to subscribe and then watch other shows, and then they're telling their friends and so on and so forth. So, I mean, it's just a mix of a lot of different factors, really.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I think the content does heavily dictate the viewership timeline, so you'll see fluctuations, you know, at the beginning of the season and all that stuff, because people are just now, you know, tuning in and figuring out, oh, here's all these new shows I want to watch. So you will see spikes in subscriptions and things around that.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in particular, if you want to talk about some new content coming up, we've got some cool stuff to talk about.
Sure. Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. Cool. So, actually, we're working on our next season here. This is the
fall
season. And we're going through our licensing runs and getting new shows in. So, we actually have some new shows for you.
Yeah, we can make some announcements on NCAST today.
Excellent. I'm excited. Tell me all about it.
Let's see, where do we want to start? Well, as you guys know, probably, we already picked up the continuation of Seraph at the End and Noragami.
And Aria the Scarlet.
And Aria. So those are things that they're continuing. We're obviously continuing, I mean, Fairy Tale and One Piece is whenever those are.
That one's kind of a given.
Yeah.
What? I'm so stunned.
That was our big announcement. There's going to be more One Piece.
Breaking news.
guess I can start on some of these. So we're happy to announce today that we will be streaming Heavy Object.
Okay.
This is the new JC Staff show based on the light novel that is by the creator of A Certain Magical Index. So this one is more of a harder sci-fi feel than Index. Index has a little more fantasy, but this one, the premise has sort of this... it's a sort of a more realistic look at what would happen if you have mech warfare with, you know, one type of mecha that is dominating. So there's these objects, and they're the new giant war machines, and, you know, tanks, guns, fighter planes, all of these things are completely useless against them. And it's just an exploration of how that affects warfare, and then what happens to some of the soldiers and the pilot of the object in this world. So that one I'm really excited for. I'm actually going to be working on that, and I worked on A Certain Magical Index before. So it's going to be cool to be working on the same author's two works.
Cool.
Another show we got, Valkyrie Drive Mermaid, which is, this one's going to be kind of a sci-fi...
Fantasy action, yeah. But also Yuri. So that's pretty exciting. We're picking up more Yuri titles. This one has two female characters, and kissing is involved, but also turning into giant swords and fighting. Yes, through kissing. That's the important part. So that's that's really cool. And I think that that's you know, just a continuation of us trying to get more broad content that can appeal to a lot of different people. So,
yeah, and this one's based on a video game.
It's like a media mix property in Japan. So now they're making the anime of it, so that's cool.
Yeah.
I'll cover the next one, Dance with Devils. So this is an otome gay property that is based on games by Ridget. This one is a girl, and she's at a school, and the school is all full of hot demon boys and hijinks ensue. Also, there's gonna be a lot of music in it, so that one's pretty cool. I'm excited for that one for some reasons, maybe.
And then
Gundam.
First Gundam title.
Yes. You're doing Gundam,
Iron-Blooded Orphans. This one I'm super excited about. I'm sure a lot of your viewership already knows this, but it's written by Okada Mari.
Yep.
Who did things like Anohana. You know, she's like a lot, and she did We Cross. She does a lot of these like kind of drama type shows, I think. And I think that her portrayal of the characters is very sensitive, but also it's going to be Gundam, so this is going to be really great, and I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, Gundam. And then we have, one more?
Yeah.
One more. Not exactly a shocker, but we're excited to have it. We're going to be picking up the Attack on Titan Junior High series.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, basically, if you're not familiar with the series, it's Attack on Titan, but in junior high!
Yes.
Yeah.
So the normal humans that you're used to knowing are going to junior high, also with the Titans there.
Titans, because
so,
they need to be educated.
Yeah,
too.
And you know, you can't really discriminate against Titans. That's not really right. But yeah, so this is based on the spin-off manga that is published by Kodansha, and it's going to be you know, your gag spin-off comedy, which I actually have a really soft spot for those kind of shows. So yeah, I'm pretty excited for this one too.
Yeah, cool. I mean, it's a great start to the simulcast season for us. Again, these are all going to be available, obviously, on Funimation.com as soon as we can. Some dates probably to come soon. Dates
okay.
and times we'll figure out as soon as we get them.
Sometime in the next week, more than likely.
Yeah, probably.
Hopefully.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Right.
That's cool on Gundam. That was a big question mark because the streaming history of Gundam is very poor.
Yeah,
in the US.
And we're so glad. Like, it's going to be, like, now it's actually available for people to watch very easily, or it's going to be, rather. And, you know, that's a little bit counter to what has been in the past. So, yeah, super excited about that one.
I mean, I would imagine in the past, maybe there's been some reluctance on your part to step into that world because Gundam is historically a tough sell in the U.S. It's had a real rocky, weird history here with U.S. releases. And so it's interesting to take a step into that world.
I don't know if it's that so much. It's just sometimes shows are not available to us. So in this case, it was. So we're really excited about
that. Yeah, I know Gundam has a history of difficult licensing,
yeah,
at the very least.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, totally. Okay, well, that's exciting. So no premiere dates or anything on any of this stuff, but coming soon.
Yeah, by the time this comes out, we might actually have those. So maybe we'll give you that by the time... Friday hits or whatever.
Hopefully. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. Because on Preview Guide, we sit there and go, when is Funimation putting the show out? We have to know. Because the minute you do, we have to drop everything and work on it right then. So we sit there and wait for those premiere announcements. It's soon. It's tough. Speaking of which, so I just wanted to clarify this. You guys are going to be running the final Blood Blockade, right?
Yes.
Don't know exactly what the schedule is for it. But
I don't know off the top of my head either. Sorry about that.
And I think since that was part of our Double Talk block as well, we'll potentially be incorporating that final episode into our Double Talk episode whenever the broadcast dub happens of it.
Okay. You guys hadn't mentioned that show yet, and the perception among fans is that one was kind of a big breakout success.
I
think it's great. Yeah, no, it's great. I think it wasn't a big surprise. I think it was just
sure.
Show.
Right, I mean, it was by the creator of Trigun, so that's pretty awesome. I think we just didn't mention it because we were talking about this current season stuff rather than previous seasons.
Sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge one.
Yeah.
Sure. So Seraph of the End, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another obvious, like, oh, well, of course that's doing well. It looked nice, too. That show looked really good. Okay, excellent. Well, that's exciting. That's a lot of stuff. You guys continue to be a serious competitor in this marketplace, so congratulations.
Trying.
So before we get to Twitter questions, the point of this episode was supposed to be, I wanted to talk to you guys specifically about marketing, and maybe we can get into this a little bit before we get into the Twitter questions, but I really wanted to know, since Jennifer's here and you're working on a ton of stuff that everyone's heard of and you're kind of in the trenches on this, what are the specific challenges? Because anime is such a weird place to be working in entertainment. What are the challenges when your job is to sell anime to Americans and a slightly wider audience than that? But chiefly, you know, you're in the business of selling anime to Americans. So what is the biggest challenge involved in doing that? Like, what do you wake up thinking about?
I guess, is this more like a psychological challenge or like a logistical challenge, I guess?
Both. I guess both. But I'm more interested in the psychological angle. Like,
okay.
How do you sell anime to an American, especially given the idea that anime is free? Like, that has really, really ingrained itself in anime fandom.
Well, for me, I guess a lot of the times, and this is maybe the reason that I think this is because, I mean, I started out as an anime fan before selling anime,
right.
is the idea of spending money on anime. And when you spend money on something, that's you value it more, I guess. And a lot of times for a lot of the people who are buying anime, wanting to support Japan is a huge part of it. And that's that should pretty much go without saying. Like, if you're watching something, if you're watching something legally and streaming it, of course, you're supporting Japan and you're helping us pay for licenses and send money back to the creators, but you can also do that by actually paying for Blu-rays and DVDs. At the same point, and I think that this is something that I sort of discovered on my own the most in college, ownership of something like this, I think, is something that's really important to a lot of people. Being able to have a shelf that you can display all your stuff and show to your friends. A lot of times I buy anime that I want, like, that I loved, but what's important for me is to be able to share it with other people and be like, man, have you seen this? You have to watch it. And having something physical that you can show people, it's sort of like a physical manifestation of why you like this show. And, you know, being able to lend it out to people makes you sort of a tastemaker. It makes you the person that everyone else comes to as sort of like the expert in anime. So when I think of it, I think of things like Blu-rays and DVDs as just the manifestation of your love for anime in general. So I think that a lot of times, when we're trying to sell Blu-rays and DVDs, sometimes we do go off of things like that. And that's why there are things like, things like collector editions, for example, or just an example I can think of off the top of my head. For like 009 Re-Cyborg, we put in a 44-page guidebook that has a bunch of information about the director's vision and things like that. Like, that's something that I think is a little more tangible, and it sort of shows, you know, you're going to the next level as an anime fan.
Okay, so it's more of so now purchasing, you're not buying anime because that's the way to watch it. That's your way to watch. I mean, some people I'm sure are, but
some people do. That's definitely true. We definitely, like, if you go to a convention, and I think this even surprised me when I was starting to work conventions a little bit on my side, but a lot of people do also want to pick stuff up, and they want to hear from other people, you know, oh, well, this show is really good, and here's sort of why, and then that's what will get them to watch it as well. I think not to go too much back into this anime lifestyle thing, but I think that, you know, when you buy a Blu-ray or a DVD, that's sort of the step. That's where anime is coming into your life, more than just watching the show itself. And, of course, that's only one way that people sort of express their anime lifestyle. I don't know if this is going to become a thing, like a saying this or something like this.
Well, I mean, I do have a bracelet that says hashtag anime life.
I need to get one of those. Yeah, but so I think that, you know, it's just a way that people, I guess, manifest how important anime is in their lives.
Well, that follows what everyone's been saying about physical media for the last 5 years, is that it's slowly becoming a collector's market instead of just the way people consume media. That so your collector's editions point to that more, where now it's like, okay, well, there's a $120 version of Tokyo Ghoul if you want that. And that version might sell out faster than the others. I mean, certainly we saw that with Cowboy Bebop. You know, those collector's editions, that's kind of, it seems like that's where the market for anime is going. At the same time, anime is also the only category in physical media that didn't crater in 2014 that actually saw growth. Mm-hmm. So now you're seeing major media companies show interest in anime, like, for instance, Warner Home Video, Universal. You guys are in bed with them now. So you're seeing more interest in anime on a physical media front, but that can't only be due to collector sales. It must be across the board. All boats are being lifted in terms of anime on physical media.
Well, also anime is kind of getting resurgence now in the past couple of years, so sure. It has to do with that as well, I would say. Right.
Yeah, and I think to your point, with this resurgence, some people that are entering the anime market are now willing to make the commitment to put money down and buy something.
Right.
And I think also, you know, a lot of us, you know, I guess speak for myself here as well, are now at an age and a point in our life where I have disposable income to buy all the things that I wanted to buy that I couldn't buy before.
Right.
And so I think anime hits that demographic market as well. That's just like, oh, we're smart people that have good jobs now. You know? Like,
right.
I can just buy all kinds of stuff.
So fans that are sort of my age, you know, in their 30s, they're finally at a point now where they didn't leave their anime fandom behind. It stayed with them into adulthood, and they're now making money and raising families, and they have money to buy a DVD if they want a DVD. So mm-hmm. That's a little different from before, where it would largely be like, well, teenagers don't have any money to buy Blu-rays, and they just pirate everything anyway. And then they stop being anime fans once they get out of college. So it's shrug. But
yeah,
I think we
utilize the mix between our streaming service, you know, to capture that kind of area of need where you're like, oh, I just want to watch anime. Like, I want to watch a whole lot of it. I want to binge watch it. And I don't have a whole lot of money to spend on it, but I want to watch it right now. And so you got that market. And then, you know, the physical market is people are like, I really like this show. I want to make sure that I own it because it's a part of my life. I don't want to have it because the streaming service is great, but it's not something that you potentially have and own that particular show for the rest of your life.
Yeah, you can't really put that on a shelf. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't really work like that, I guess. So I think that that's a major part for it.
Yeah. At the same time, streaming services are sort of training people that they don't need the physical copy on their shelf anymore, and they don't want a shelf of DVDs. They, if they're going to watch something, they're just going to turn on Netflix or go to Funimation.com and watch their anime there, and they're not necessarily going to rewatch it. Like, buying is for collectors. That's become kind of the new truism, but obviously there's a lot more to it than that, and the market is much larger than just collectors.
Yeah.
And I think it's not just people who want, I keep saying the shelf thing, but I think it's not just that. Buying is also for people who want to show their support for something, who want to rewatch something multiple times at whenever they want.
Yeah, and sharing.
Sharing,
back to your sharing
huge.
Portion is a big
yeah.
part of it, I think.
Right.
But, you know, what we want to do here at Funimation is basically give anime to the people how they want to see it. So making all the different venues, you know, available, even if it's not streaming video, if it's the, you know, electronic sell-through, EST, what's the consumer term for that? download to own, buy things.
Legal digital download.
HD digital stuff. You can get off of PlayStation, you know, and Xbox and all that. And, I mean, I've bought a bunch of stuff personally. I use Amazon a whole lot.
Yeah.
And so I've got my, like, digital movie catalog of stuff I've bought because, you know, now that I've bought it and it's in my Amazon, you know, library, I can watch it whenever and not rely on a streaming service to potentially have it and then not have it later.
Yeah.
So, I mean, convenience is a huge factor, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the convenience of streaming versus the convenience of having something digitally owned versus the convenience of having something physical where I can play it on any machine or player wherever I am also. So people have their preferences, and I think people have mixed preferences. I do. Same.
Right. So back to the marketing question here. So Jennifer, you worked on Free Eternal Summer. Mm-hmm. Just as like an exercise to sort of help people understand like what it is you do, like the challenges involved in your job. When you looked at Free Eternal Summer, when you look at Free, you get assigned the show. Where does your brain go? What is the first thing you're like, okay, I have to sell this? Where does your brain go? What do you do?
Free is a little bit of an
I don't want to know where Jen's brain goes when she thinks about Free. Let me put it that way.
I have very strong feelings about Free. Not completely on topic, but when the first PV for Free came out, like before we even knew it was an anime, when Animation Do and Kyoto Animation put out that first like just little commercial, Gia turned to me and she was like, Gia, one of the other brand managers here, and she was like, yeah, so we're gonna have to like fight over this one. And I was like, no, we don't have to fight. I've already claimed it. I'm working on this. Sorry, you don't have a choice. So that aside,
staked her claim.
So that's like Free is a little bit intense for this one. Sorry, I think my inner fangirl is showing a little bit. Anyway, okay. Backtracking. So I think that with a lot of these, the way that I sort of like to see it, and I think I have a sort of superpower in that I can work on any brand and I can really appreciate all of them. But I think that it's finding out, like, you know, there's the difference between what happens in the show and what people latch onto for it. So for Free as an example, based on, you know, not just my experience but also hearing what other fans are saying and stuff, Free is more than just, this is just a show for me. This is just you know, some seasonal anime that I'm going to watch. I think for a lot of fans, Free is sort of a representation of a shift in the industry toward where anime is being made and targeted for a specific audience for young women a lot of the times, and that's why it's important to me. So I think that with a lot of these, you know, this is sort of like the positioning of the title, is finding out what the thesis of this show is and what is it that people latch onto, and then everything else comes from that. So it's like, you know, what kinds of, and I mean, this might sound a little abstract, but like, what kinds of posters do you put out? What kinds of social media messages do you put out? What conventions do you go to? How do you represent at conventions? All of that just comes from that. I don't know how in depth or specific you want to go into that, but I think that that's sort of where the impetus of everything is.
Well, you're talking a lot about what fans online are already saying about it, and I would imagine like that is something that you do as a fan naturally, but it is also a function of your job, is that it's really important that you're paying attention to what anime fans say about this show online and the fan culture that has popped up around a show like Free. But at some point, as a marketer, as a professional, your job is to sell Free to everybody. And so at some point it must be diminishing returns selling the show based on like fan memes and what fans already know about and like about the show, because they've already been sold on it. They're already fans. You already have those people.
Sure, and it really depends on brand to brand. Like what we were saying about 009 Re-Cyborg earlier, you know, there are a lot of people who watched it, who got into it because they saw it on Toonami first, but there are also a lot of people who picked it up at some store, and they're like, man, this looks really cool, I want to check this out. So I think that there's a lot of stuff that balances between these. And again, like some titles you do really need to think about beyond just that core fan group that you already have, and some titles not so much. So again, with the 009 example, well, you know, we have this, we have like for that title, the slipcover for this has like this really gorgeous like metallic foil rainbow look on it. That's very eye catching, so that if it's in like a store or at a convention, like people will be drawn to that immediately. It's like little things like that, I guess, that you're thinking about all these different audiences.
Yeah,
it's hard to blanket statement, I guess, but if there are examples, we can.
I mean, I think that's a good point that Jen brought up about the different points of interaction with a product and an anime fan is it can be very different. It could be something they saw online. It could be an ad they saw. It could be a meme, or it could be their first interaction with the product in hand at a retail store, at a convention, or whatever. And so you've got to think about what each individual person is seeing and how they would respond to it in that particular instance. So for example, you know, on the free packaging or something, we want somebody to pick up free, and even if they don't necessarily know what free is, there's something there that's going to lead them to purchasing it. And that could be different psychology based on the audience and content and stuff too. So luckily, you know, we have a great creative team here. The graphic designer who's working on free is a big fan of free as well. So that helps too, because you can understand the show and appreciate the nuances and accentuate kind of what it is that makes people latch onto that show.
See, for free, you could refer to it as an advertisement. Right.
Oh dear.
You can have that for free. That's for free. That one's on you.
Is that also going to be part of your consulting fee?
Yes. Well, that's interesting. I because to me, anime is like this. It's this niche product that has appeal outside of just its own niche, but selling it must be this tremendous challenge. Not only because of the fan culture, but just because oftentimes it doesn't look like anything else out there, and a lot of people look at it and immediately just, oh, it's anime. I'm not interested. Which must be a huge hurdle, like a huge barrier for you, because as we've joked about on the show and talked about it before, anime does have a challenge in, like, so now that geek culture is mainstream, you know, obviously it's not really special to be a nerd or a geek anymore, like, sorry, everyone is. Anime is kind of like, well, I'm into Star Wars and I really like video games and stuff, but anime, that's for the real nerds. Like, that's kind of, that's true. That's the way it's kind of stigmatized.
It's for the cool nerds.
Breaking past, sure, tell yourself that all you want. breaking past that barrier, do you even bother? Or is it, well, we know who our audience is, we're going to serve these people, and we don't really care if, like, the ESPN crowd wants to buy Space Dandy.
It really depends on the show. Like, it's really hard. Like,
you can't really make a lot of blankets. I understand that.
Yeah. No, I want to try to answer this as much as possible, though. Like, so for example, with Free as an example, I think that that's a title where we want to rely on the existing fan base to, you know, spread that to their friends, you know, like, because it's a very social show. It's a kind of show that, a lot of people watch together with other people. So I think that that's sort of, you know, you target the core there. You target the people who, already love Free, but you remind them of why they love it and how it's more than just a show for them, and that's what makes them spread it out. But then you have other shows, like some of the
Tokyo Ghoul, for example. Sure. That Tokyo Ghoul is a great example of a show that you try to get beyond the core anime audience. It's a show that's been very widely talked about from not just anime fans but people on the fringe markets, and so that one you're gonna put a little bit out there beyond your typical anime fans, you know, because of the nature of the show, the horror aspect, the psychological kind of content and stuff. It has a tendency to be able to reach beyond that and become part of just general geek culture rather than just the anime culture.
And, like, you think about what shows that general, like what you're saying, these general geek sites, what shows they latch onto and what shows that they start talking about.
Right.
And those are the ones that you're going to try to go wider and farther with.
Right. So basically, like, something that would get coverage on a site like IO9 or like IGN when they're not doing their own specialized anime content, something that's going to appeal to a guy who's reading a website that mostly talks about Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of who you're... That if you're going to reach an audience beyond your existing one, it's those people, and only very certain shows can break through that.
And, yeah, and there is a tricky part to trying to touch that audience, too, because reaching them it can be very difficult due to the amount of noise in the marketing space.
Yeah.
So we're competing with the Marvel movies. We're competing with these top franchise video games, and they're millions upon millions of dollars of marketing budgets and things like that. So you got to get a little creative in the way of getting them to take attention and notice, because our content, honestly, it's just, if it's hitting that market, it's just really, really good content.
Right.
So you got to rely on that to be able to break through that noise. And be a bigger splash in those respective fan cultures.
I think if you're familiar with anime's presence and impact at San Diego Comic-Con, that is a really good visual metaphor for its place in the mainstream geek culture.
Yeah.
I feel like that's... Because it totally... It gets kind of drowned out at Comic-Con, but the people who are there for it are very hardcore.
So that's a great example, actually. Going to that and taking what we did at Comic-Con and showing how we marketed something to break through certain noise. So we partnered with Legendary in their space over at Petco Park with, you know, Geek & Sundry and Nerdist and all of them to do a Dragon Ball Z activation, our Frieza recruitment center there. And so being able to do something with those people in their space, but having a footprint that's, you know, big enough to take notice with those people, but we had to do it in partnership with these other geek culture kind of communities.
Right.
We didn't do it by ourselves because, again, it's very difficult to do that. And I think, again, yeah, that's a great visual representation of the environment at the from a marketing sphere that would take place. And we did a party. So we did our party 3 nights in a row, which was way too many nights for me to handle.
Yeah.
Jesus. I don't think I'd ever want to do that again. It was fun. Trust me, it was fun. But 3 nights of throwing a party is really rough on you.
Yeah, you're throwing it. It's not like you're at someone else's party, standing around drinking their liquor and eating their hors d'oeuvres. Yeah. Like you're stuck. Where you're working at that party.
Exactly. But it takes things like that to be noticed in that space.
Right.
And so you got to figure out how you can do that.
Because especially on a stage like Comic-Con, you are literally competing with the biggest stuff. Like, you're competing with Star Wars at that point. So that's, you know, I don't know. It's interesting to think about. Okay, so let's go ahead and get to the Twitter questions. There are a lot of them. I wanted to talk a little bit more about marketing, but we are getting close to time here, so we got to get to these. Okay, up front, there were a lot of questions about all these delays and pushbacks on some of your physical media releases. Free was delayed. Tokyo Ghoul was delayed. Some other stuff was delayed. What is that? The switch over to Universal? Is that what's happening there? Or were there specific problems with those releases?
Well, for Free, I can go ahead and say right now that we're actually going to have a pretty big update about that. I think it's going to be next week that's coming out. So just stay tuned for that. You're going to hear a lot of news about that release pretty soon.
Yeah. For the Tokyo Ghoul Collector's Edition, basically we made our statement on our blog about the defect in manufacturing on the Collector's Edition. Basically, all the information that we have has been posted there, so
okay.
I could just reread it if you
okay,
want.
Okay, I'll tell. Yeah, we'll link to it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And are you anticipating more of these two individual cases, and otherwise there shouldn't be much interruption?
Yeah, they've all been kind of case by case, individual kind of instances. Nothing that's affecting the overall distribution model right now.
It just sort of unfortunately happened all at once.
Yeah.
Okay. When it rains, it pours. All right. And we always get, this is like the new question. It used to be, when are they going to license to Tommy Galaxy? Like, that was the question we always got. Now the question we always get, I mean, you tell me what it is. You already know.
I wonder.
Let's see. Which one? I'm going to think. I got to pick my favorite. All right. No. The one. Okay. Here's the one that over this past summer, I wish I just had a tape recorder that I could hit play on.
Right.
Every time somebody asked me. So Evangelion 3.33.
There you go. You win.
There you go.
Yeah.
Did we get it right?
Yes, you did. Yeah.
Yay.
Of course. I want to know too, but you know.
Well, guys. There is news.
What?
We do have some news on Evangelion 3.33. So, we're getting some details locked in right now, but what I can tell you right now is that Evangelion 3.33 will be releasing early 2016.
Okay.
So, we should have some more by New York next weekend, I guess, New York Comic Con. For finalizing the release date and specifics.
Okay.
But yes, it will be coming out in early 2016. Can I get a sign that says that for like right now so I can just put on a shirt or something?
You've broken our hearts so many times, I just don't know if we can love again. That's like, that's, you know, we're in a bad place, so.
I know. That's something, right?
That's definitely something. That is a date. And yeah, all right, early 2016. Okay.
Yep.
Theatrical?
Theatrical, sorry, which one?
On Evangelion? Theatrical? Maybe?
No. I don't think so.
Too much time has passed.
Yeah, I mean, we did the theatrical, right? And that was done. So this is specifically home video release.
I mean, well, that was like a super. That was sort of before you really had that all figured out, right?
Yeah.
So now you wouldn't do it again.
Definitely not the same kind of capacity we're doing them at now. Yeah. But I think the time has come for it to be a home video release.
But for the fourth one, you're totally going to have it. You're going to have it in theaters no more than a week after it premieres in Japan, right? I mean, that's what we can look forward to that.
Hey, you know what? I'll tell you this. We did two world premieres of different things in the U.S. this year. Not saying that would happen for Evangelion, but no idea about Evangelion 4, to be honest.
A lot of questions about the Blu-ray of the TV show. I'm sure you can't say anything about that.
Yeah, no license to that. Nothing we're working on.
All right. Nothing you're working on? So you're not even looking at it?
Well, I mean, we don't have it, so I don't.
Okay.
We have no information on it.
I got to trick you into giving me information. okay. Was there anything else that sort of like a lot of questions about it? I think that kind of covers the major. I got a lot of questions about this one thing.
All right. No update on Dragon Ball Super as well. I'm just going to put it out there. No information on that. Nothing right now.
Well, you are presenting something at New York Comic Con.
I mean, we're going to be talking about Super.
Okay.
But we don't have the license to Super. Because we're going to have the voice of Goku, Sean Schemmel, and the voice of Vegeta. It's hard to talk about Dragon Ball Z now without also talking about Super, especially with the movies we released, with Battle of Gods and Resurrection F being, well, more Battle of Gods, I guess, being tied to Super so closely.
Right.
So it's hard to just even have a conversation without being like, yes, we know Super exists. We know what's going on with Super from a Japanese standpoint. We don't know what's happening in the U.S. still, because no one has a license to it. So, yeah, we'll basically say that. But with Goku and Vegeta.
Spoilers.
So the line right now is that you don't have the license to Dragon Ball Super, so somebody else could potentially pick up Dragon Ball Super? I mean, is that what
basically
you're saying?
Nobody in the U.S. has licensed it at this time.
Okay.
So
All right.
That's in a nutshell.
All right. Well, interesting. Okay, all right, so let's get to these questions then. My enemy waifu asks, why do you guys, this is a friend of mine, he's a good dude, why do you guys think anime disc sales have sustained themselves while the rest of physical media has been collapsing?
We kind of talked about that.
Yeah, right?
Earlier.
I think it's the resilience of the anime fan to want to purchase and collect and share, and that community that the anime fan has created is, I think, what's really keeping that.
Yeah, it's because a lot of anime fans see anime as more than just, you know, something you turn on the TV or you boot up your streaming service and watch and then you're done with it, because anime fans are more, you know, involved in anime as a hobby, even more than just entertainment, then they exhibit that by manifesting it in their real lives. So I think that's pretty much it. Oh, and also anime is, like, doing pretty well lately,
right.
So it's getting more popular.
Yeah. Also looks really cool. I mean, just in general, like, legitimately, anime, like, home video releases look way cooler than a lot of other home video releases.
Yeah, it looks, and, like, especially on Blu-ray, so.
Mm. Yeah, totally. Okay. Omo at producer asks, how did you guys end up licensing Poochie Moss, but not the rest of the Idolmaster franchise?
I'll let Jen speak about
that. Weird anomaly.
I know that guy. We can't really go too much into things like contracts or licensors or anything like that. But I will say that sometimes parts of franchises are available to people like us, licensees, and sometimes they're not. I think that going anywhere more specific into why Poochie Moss specifically and not the rest of the Idolmaster franchise would be going into contracts that we can't really talk about, but I think that that's probably a general enough.
Yeah, I mean, just because also, because it's a show that is involved, like, let's say there's various different shows in the franchise, that doesn't mean the rights to all of that is all the same.
Right.
So, or even the same people are on the committees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they'll have different committees, the people who might have, and again, not talking about Idolmaster and Poochie Moss specifically, but just in general, the members of the committees who have the international rights may be different from show to show. So,
even if it's in the same franchise.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's such a weird thing to license. I think that's sort of where the question's coming from, which is, you know, this is a gag show that's for people who are fans of Idolmaster. It would be kind of like watching Attack on Titan Junior High without watching Attack on Titan or having any real knowledge of it. Like, I can't imagine that would be too much fun. So it seems like a weird license. It seems like
Admittedly, it is kind of strange. As an Idolmaster fan right here, right now, you know, it definitely helps if you are a huge Idolmaster fan. It really adds to, you know, being able to watch Puchimasu and understanding the characters and the jokes. But at the same time, like, we've shown Puchimasu at conventions and even in some theaters. And we had a lot of people who had never even heard of Idolmaster, and they still thought it was hilarious. Yeah. So,
all right.
Slowly converting people.
I guess adding on to that one, Puchimasu was available at that time and it was timely, and it was part of a streaming like thing, right? It was new when we got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the other stuff wasn't necessarily new.
Well, for the original Idolmaster.
Yeah.
Something you picked up during a simulcast season.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which at that point the point is to get as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Benjamin Oscar 77 wants to know, all the films that were listed during the Dragon Ball Resurrection of F premiere, obviously they're trailers for some other Funimation movies, and he wants to know, will they all see wide release in theaters? Obviously, I don't know if he means wide release, like a traditional wide release, just a theatrical release.
They are going to get theatrical releases, and they're all going to be event style, pretty much like we're doing right now.
Okay.
Yeah, we can't really go into details of exactly how they'll be released, honestly, partially because we're still working through that, too, mm-hmm. talking to exhibitors and things like that. But just stay tuned for more information, I guess, is what we can say on that. But
yeah.
They will be in theaters somewhere in the U.S.
So. Okay. And the second part of that question is, obviously, you said you can't really comment on the exact release, but he wants to know if any of them will be dubbed for the theatrical release.
I'm not sure if we can talk about that right now, but again, we'll have more.
Yeah, I mean, we did do Dragon Ball Z dubbed, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Attack on Titan is coming out subtitled, but it's live action. So I would say it's likely, but we could give you specifics on
right.
each individual thing.
All right. Maddie125 asks, how do you market anime to anime fans without making it cringeworthy? And he's referring to a lot of the marketing attempts in the past by maybe some companies that are not with us anymore. Some of the weird marketing that's gone on over the last like 10 years. You know, a lot of, I'm sure both of you are very familiar with all of that stuff. You know, the ADV do it now and, you know, it's not kid stuff, you know, that kind of thing. How do you, I mean, obviously being experienced marketing professionals changes your outlook on that, but I mean, is it really easy to fall into a trap of making it really marketing anime like really cringeworthy?
I would say
sure. I could take this a little bit. I think that being a mix between a professional and also a fan can really help with this because as a fan, if you see something and it makes you cringe, then maybe it's not a good idea. I mean, maybe that's
right.
a little too simplistic, I guess.
Yeah. No, that's. Yeah, so long as you got to have a real good personal sense of whether or not something is cringy.
And it's not just like, oh, I've watched a ton of anime in my life and therefore I know. It's also, you know, paying attention to what other people are doing, paying attention to how people react to stuff. And I think nobody ever gets everything 100%, but it's just seeing how people react and sort of learning from that. So.
I think a big part of it on our end is respecting the fan. Our fans are intelligent people. Our fans... you know, our diverse crowd, if we understand and respect them, I feel like we're less likely to make something that's cringeworthy. Because a lot of times something becomes cringeworthy because the marketer who's creating it isn't respecting, like, this audience.
Yeah, has a low opinion
yeah.
of the audience.
And so it's like, oh, they just want this crap. They just want...
And oversimplifies them
mm-hmm.
a lot of the times. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. BJ Wanlund asks, okay, obviously you're not going to tell us how much you paid for Speed Racer. But he does want to know if you have the materials.
I don't actually know. I'm not on the brand, so I haven't been
yeah.
paying attention to that.
I know when we made the announcement, it wasn't a thing where we had materials yet.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I know, I think, we, yeah, not to my knowledge at this time. And again, we are planning to do a Blu-ray release of it, so obviously we would need the... materials to make that at a point in time, but right now, no word.
And similar to that, we did get a lot of questions about all those Bandai license rescues, which I'm sure at this point you just love being asked about. When are those coming? People are very excited to get their hands on those Blu-rays, But from what we understand, it is still a materials issue.
I think we actually can say a little bit about this one. We do have some materials for some titles. We're sorting through those right now, the materials that are made available. We're not going to go into the specifics of which shows we have materials for. But, you know, a part of that, just because we have materials, we also need to ensure that we have, you know, the highest quality materials that are possible for that release. And we can go ahead and say that there are definitely plans for some 2016 releases, so stay tuned for more announcements.
So some stuff is going to make it out in 2016.
Yep.
And you announced all this in 2013, right?
It was at Otakon during when we announced Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, yeah, it was 2013.
Yeah.
So
wow. It's been 2013. Jeez.
Yeah, it's 2 years, and you're still like, see, this is what baffles me about this, because I'm like, what contract did you sign that gave them 2 years to deliver materials? Like, that's absurd to me.
Yeah, I think you have to remember that licensors are working on a lot of different things at once. You know, they're working on whatever new shows are coming out. They're working on merchandising and things for previous shows that have come out. There's just a lot of stuff going on, really.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, but it's...
fine balance of badgering someone and also getting them to give you the newest, hottest thing at the same time, probably. Yeah.
It's a lot of relationship building.
I think at some point it becomes complete... Like, okay, 6 months after you announced it, ridiculous to complain. A year after you announced it, okay, well, you got Cowboy Bebop out there, so maybe not... Let's not complain about this. 2 full years, and we don't even have release dates on, like, Outlaw Star, Escaflowne, and these are shows people are dying to get their hands on.
Oh,
and
we're dying to.
Yeah,
the response is still... Well, and if the response is like, well, we don't have the materials yet, the question asked is like, what the fuck, guys? Like, tell Japan to send you the stuff. So you could get. I think it's an understandable frustration.
Yeah, that's a good point, though. What Justin just said.
Yeah, that's if we can even. That's if they even know.
Right.
Where to find it.
It's in a cardboard box in the back of a warehouse somewhere. So they gotta. Yeah. No. I think people understand the logistics, but I think as time rolls on, the frustration with, well, we don't even have the materials yet, that becomes more understandable to me. Where it's like, this just seems like maybe it wasn't a great. Like, something about this should have been more set in stone before the announcement or something like that. Like, if you could have gone back and, like, held those announcements for, like, 2014. Like, summer 2014, maybe...
Well, sometimes there's a reason that we have to announce things, not that I'm going to go into specifics.
Right, yeah, no, I understand. All I'm saying is that I
don't
want
to say we're unsympathetic. Like, yeah. We also want to see this stuff happen, too,
dude,
so we
I
can...
Kill
understand.
Someone for an Outlaw Star.
Oh, I really need Escaflowne, personally.
Yeah. Yeah, we really, like, we did an episode of this show that was just on Escaflowne. Everyone's like, hey, wait for the Blu-rays. And I'm like, I would like to do this before I retire. Like, that would be great. I'm just saying I empathize with the frustration. Okay.
That's doing.
So Mike, as do you, I'm sure. So Mike Toole wants to know the situation behind this mysterious Space Battleship Yamato Resurrection license that was announced when you... I believe this was an episode of Confusion where it was announced that you had this when you also had the live-action film, but that was Confusion?
We do not have the license for Space Battleship Yamato Resurrection.
Okay, you don't have it.
2009.
Right. So that's...
Great property, but we do not have the license.
Right, okay. So that's set in stone. That's it. You don't have it. Mm-hmm. Okay... Nancy Thistlethwaite wants to know if you can share what percentage of your subscriber base is female.
And again, we touched on this a little bit before, but finding demographic information like that, sometimes we just don't have, because again, lots of people might be, you know, sharing accounts and things like that. We just don't really have that. So we don't really have a percentage breakdown. And I think all we can say is, well, we have a lot of shoujo titles, for example, that are doing pretty well. Okay. And of course, we know that anime as a whole, there's a pretty good even gender split amongst fans. So sorry that we can't give anything a little bit more specific, but I know her question there was a little bit of like, do girls really buy anime? And the answer is yes, girls buy anime.
Yeah, you're not doing the thing where like, I don't know, that show's for girls. I don't know.
Right.
Like, it's
because,
like, of
course. Yeah, a lot of guys like shoujo stuff and lots of girls like shonen stuff. I mean, yeah. there's no such thing as a show only for such and such. But yes, I think that the real question behind that is, you know, some people in sort of geek entertainment world might say, oh, well, such and such is only for boys and girls don't buy such and such, girls don't have money or whatever. And it's like, that's not true. That's never been something that we've thought.
Yeah, I was very relieved and happy that the response to the ridiculous assertion or the ridiculous assertion that girls don't buy anime was loud and fierce and like, what the no? Like, you have to be kidding me.
I think I buy more anime than probably anyone in this building.
It's very possible.
Possibly. I'm not gonna challenge anybody, but I'm a girl, so
all right. Okay. All right, Miles, your friend of mine from Crunchyroll.
Hey, Miles.
Really wants to know if you're bringing Jennifer to more conventions this year. He thought she was really cool.
Oh boy. I feel like there's a sense of like sarcasm happening there, but no, I think he's.
Oh man.
Any plans?
It's not really my call to make. That's true. So,
not for the rest of this season, though, to my knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I guess more pertinent question is: do you like doing cons? Would you like to do more?
Oh yeah, and I think that you know, after, of course, I've been going to cons forever, right? A lot of people here have, but I think that being on the other side and being able to, like, you know, being behind the booth, for example, and talking to people about why Steins Gate is awesome, you know, all should buy it, and like
explaining what the hell, where I should start with Index. And
oh yeah, that's one of my favorites. You know, like, but I mean, so. When you talk to people over the internet and stuff, it's different from in life conversations. Apparently, somebody never told me this, but I've started to learn that. I think that on one hand, you know, as marketers, we get to see, you know, what stuff really sways people. I mean, when you look at sales numbers, you don't know why somebody bought that, but being able to sort of see it firsthand is really, really helpful. And I think that everybody in our company really should be going to conventions and just trying that out. But also, it's just really rewarding to have somebody decide to pick up a title that you really love, even if it's a title that's like kind of underrated, like, you know, some of my personal favorites, and then you can explain to them, oh man, this is really cool, and they actually buy it. And it's like, that's a really good feeling. So I've loved doing it, and I'd really like to go to more if the stars align and that could happen.
Okay. Big on Anime wants to know if Full Color Disc Art is ever going to come back.
We have some titles that have Full Color Disc Art. I know that Free is going to have one of them. I can't think. Space Dandy had them as well. I can't remember what other ones off the top of my head. I think it just depends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also wants to know why the limited editions for Fullmetal Alchemist and Dragon Art Academy do not have chipboard boxes. Are you doing away with chipboard?
I think that those are just two examples. So for Dragon Art Academy, I don't want to speak too much on this because I didn't work on it, so I don't know the exact details on it. But there was sort of an opportunity to have a release that was kind of inspired by some of the stuff that was going on with the Japanese release, with a pet sleeve, I believe, is what is in it. So that's sort of an exception. And then for Full Metal Alchemist, we had a bunch of different releases for that, and there's also the collector's edition. So I think that looking at those two examples is not really indicative of how limited editions are going to look going forward. I think that those are probably more the exception rather than the rule. As in terms of what limited editions will look like, you know, in the future, if there is a change or something like that, you'll see it if that happens. But we don't have any plans of drastically changing anything like that anytime soon.
All right. Also, from Big on Anime, why do sub-only titles only get released in a regular edition, despite the overperformance of Oni-Ai, which received a limited edition?
Let's see, for Oni-Ai. Well, Oni-Ai was our first sub-only title, so that was sort of our test for it. And I think that this might be a little too inside baseball, but I think this a lot of times fans, and this is something that I did too a
baseball,
lot of the time.
What's that?
Yeah, what's baseball? Yeah, cute. But like a lot of people like are like, oh well, this title performed well, this title performed poorly, and I think that that's difficult to really say. I mean, it sounds like a really easy question: did this perform well? Did this perform not well? But
it can be very subjective.
Yeah, it's very subjective, and you would think it's not, but that's one of the things I feel like I learned really early coming here. So it's hard to say what it means for a title to perform well. But I mean, a lot of this, whether it gets a limited edition or a standard edition, a lot of that is actually pretty dependent on simulcast views, actually. I don't want to say it's a 100%, like, you know, there's like a threshold where we determine what the release is. But if you would like to see a limited edition on a particular title, I would suggest, you know, make sure you're watching it on legal streams and ask your friends to watch it as well and support the release. When we see a lot of support for a title like that, then we're more likely to, you know, realize there's a demand for it and then put something out in a limited edition.
So the best way to express yourself as a fan, if you really like a show, is to make sure you and as many people as you can influence are watching that legal stream week to week during the simulcast.
Yeah, and I think, and a lot of people don't really realize this, but those view counts, our Japanese licensors see all of them. So they're paying very close attention, and they're always asking us for updates and for more information of how popular and how successful it is in the U.S. So if you want to send a message to Japan early on, you know, before the home video release comes out, early on, the hey, that content that you guys make is awesome, and I want to see more stuff like that, definitely look into watching the legal stream.
Yeah. Yeah, and as Zach mentioned, weekly.
Yes.
Watching it weekly is the best thing you could potentially do because it's giving the first, you know, that early notification that, hey, this is doing well, people like this. I know a lot of us do like to binge watch. If you are going to binge watch the very last episode. You know, like time it out so that when you watch, get to the last episode, that is when it's airing, so you can watch it in that kind of simulcast window to make sure that those views are being communicated as early as possible.
Yeah, because that's when they're paying the most attention, and that's also when they're paying attention, you know, Japanese broadcast numbers too, and, you know, the reaction there. So it just makes sense that that's where it sort of matters more.
Yeah, it functions like Nielsen ratings.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. And yeah, I mean, for the normal consumer, think about it like not just anime fans, but people on TV and stuff. You expect a show that's going to get canceled if no one's watching it while it's airing on TV, but we have this weird notion in anime that it's like, oh, I can just watch it later and it'll be fine. But it's like, no, it's streaming, and legal streaming is broadcast, basically.
And I think the reason for that disconnect is because, you know, American fans and overseas fans have always felt a little bit disconnected from what's happening in Japan just because, you know, because of the language barrier, the time that it's taking between broadcast there and coming over to the U.S. But now that legal streaming is a thing, that barrier isn't really there. So we're, as things are becoming more globalized, where things are happening in more real time. So it's timing is actually mattering more.
Okay. All right, that's good to know. I think people really do want to know, because it's confusing in this new sort of landscape. Like, where do I make the most impact with my voting eyeballs and
yeah.
dollars?
And
like,
a lot of people, sorry to cut you off a little, a lot of people think that, you know, oh, if I stream something, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. It makes a huge difference. Like, we can't go into specifics on why or numbers or anything, but my feeling personally is that if people knew the kinds of things that we see here in terms of, you know, how streaming and how those numbers impact things, then that would really compel people to stream legally, too. Like, can't really talk about it too much, but I guess you can take our word for it.
Wait a minute. You're telling me this is a business model where you really need people to watch these streams, but the most compelling evidence you've decided you can't tell them? That's... Why don't you just tell them? Then they'll be compelled.
Again, I mean, it's things like, you know, we can't talk about what's in contracts, for example.
I know. I'm just giving you trouble.
But, I mean, for people that maybe, I mean, you know, the ANN crowd is pretty well-educated.
Yeah.
But just to clarify, we're talking about legal streams here, which involve, you know, Funimation.com, on official YouTube channels, on Hulu, whatever gets... Even including the downloadable content you get on like PlayStation and Xbox, and because some of those are getting put up for sale like the week after and things like that. So if it's not those sources, in particular, be sure you're paying attention to if it's legal or not. Right. Sometimes it can be very hard to determine if it is.
Yeah, Japan can't tell if you're watching from some other source because nobody reports those numbers back to them, and also they don't want that to happen anyway. But it goes without saying.
Yeah, and, you know, it goes without, maybe it doesn't go without saying, people kind of always need to be reminded of this. Illegal streaming sites, if you watch stuff there because, whatever, it's easier or something, you're literally giving money to criminal organizations. Yep. Don't do it. It's not worth it. You're doing you're hurting the industry by doing that. You're doing the opposite of supporting the show. It is not supporting the show to watch it on a pirate stream. You are doing the opposite of that.
And I mean, it sounds pretty obvious, but sometimes like you see people comment and stuff there, like, and they'll say like, "Oh man, I'm so excited about this show." They'll even say stuff like, "I'm so excited Funimation is dubbing this or bringing this over and stuff," but yet they're watching it there. So I mean, it sounds obvious, but at the same time, it's kind of not to a lot of people.
Well, I mean, I've encountered a lot of younger fans that are, I'll say, just now figuring out the internet. but again, some fans have legitimately, I'd be at a convention, be like, "Oh, are you watching this?" And they'll tell me and be like, "You know, that's illegal." And they're like, "What? No way." I'm like, "Yeah, it looks really legit." I'm like, "I know, but that's not a legal place to be watching this."
Well, I can't even imagine the level of frustration you guys must deal with, because literally, like, I installed Windows 10, I went to the Windows store, and the app it recommended to me was a bootleg streaming anime app. Mm-hmm. It was like, "Spotlight today, Microsoft loves this." And I'm like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" Like, I immediately sent it to your lawyers.
But, thanks for that.
You and Crunchyroll and some of the other people, but God, that's infuriating. Like, manga has it way worse right now with that stuff.
Yeah, but I think one thing, and this is sort of my personal preference, is that I would rather position this as, you know, how can you, how can we as American fans matter more to, anime as an industry, anime as a whole. I like to think of it more in the positives, that, you know, if I'm watching this, hey, I am not only supporting the people who made this, but I'm sort of voting for these shows that I love. And sometimes, those shows that might seem a little bit less popular, or they're less mainstream, but you want the creators to know, I appreciate this and I want to see more of that. So I like to personally frame it a little more positively, really, about you watch legal streams and stuff because that's how you manifest your love for anime, and that's how you start to matter more to the anime landscape.
I think that's a good point, that we're not in this market now where we're this secondary or tertiary market to the, you know, original creators in Japan. It's all happening at the same time, and we're as important to their success while it's broadcasting on television as Japan is at this point. Mm-hmm. Kind of. So, and that, like your point, that's how we can provide input, and that's how we can support.
Yeah, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but like Dimension W is a really good example of that. We are actually on Funimation is on the committee for that, so we're actually funding the production, or helping to fund the production of an anime. And you know, we couldn't do that if fans weren't supporting anime through legal means, streams, home video, etc., in the United States and Canada.
Okay. All right. Also from Big on Anime, he wants to know about the 2-week and 3-week subscriber paywalls. It used to be a 1-week standard. I don't think that standard lasted very long, but if you're ever going to go back to a standard 1-week paywall.
I think that's kind of a shifting model, really.
Right. It's also the contract you sign, right?
Yeah. So I think right now there's no plans to change to that. I think if anything, we're just going to, It's more or less a case-by-case basis as we continue to grow.
Okay, we'll get through the rest of these as quick as possible, I promise. Okay. Are any of these new questions? I think these are all... I keep hitting patches of Ava. Like, patches. 3.33. We're never going to hear, like, the full story behind what happened with that, right?
You've
like,
told the full story.
I've told her full story.
Last have time you?
On the end cuts.
Have you told the full story? Okay, all right.
But I mean, like, to be honest and real for a second, you know, there's not very many opportunities that you get to work this closely with, like, the Japanese creators on something, especially someone as, like, huge and prolific as Anno Kantoku. So, I mean, I think that that's, of course, nobody is happy about those delays, but at the same time, being able to work that closely with someone like that is kind of an opportunity.
Right. Okay, whatever you say. I'm just kidding. All right, 1UP Kid wants to know when Dragon Ball Z Kai final chapters are coming out.
I don't know that one.
I don't have any new information on that one still at this point, to be honest.
And also asking, he's also asking about the remaining One Piece films.
One Piece films. Do we...
do any more of those?
No. I mean, that new movie got announced this summer in Japan, but we haven't acquired it. Of course, you know, it's something we'd like to do at some point, but whether it's happening or not, no idea yet.
All right. Our interest feed editor, Lindsay, has asked if there are any comparisons that can be made between promoting a show's female fan service, like... you know, Want to Be the Strongest in the World, which you worked on, Jennifer. You know, shows that are aimed at men and versus shows that are aimed at women, but are fan service shows for women. So in other words, like if you put out a box with abs on it, like Free, and then you put a box with boobs on it, like Dragon Air Academy, is there any like huge difference between the sales on those two? Are you marketing them differently, or is it just like TNA, here you go?
Well, for one, I guess to address the comparison here, we haven't seen the sales of Free yet, so we can't really comment on that. And I haven't had very many titles that have that kind of fan service yet, so it's a little hard to say on that. But I think that, you know, aside from, like, I think that that's, I mean, it's a great question, but I think it's simplifying things a little bit. You know, no show is just fan service. Like, that's never the point of the show is never just here's boobs or anything like that. Like, all of them are
close,
very...
but there's something else. There's something else that somebody else likes about that show.
There's always something different. And I think that, like, I actually enjoy working on a lot of fan service titles because it's fun to see, you know, what the differences are and to realize, like, why people like these different things for different reasons. I know that on the, like, the graphic design standpoint, for example, like, it's a pretty interesting challenge for our designers to what parts do you latch on to when talking about this. So in that, I guess, I don't know if that actually...
I can tell you this much. When we do work on YouTube and we determine which video thumbnail to use, that typically can be part of the thought process. And I think that the YouTube audience, female fan service has performed a little bit better, but definitely the male... stuff works as well.
Yeah. I would say that rather than saying female versus male, number one, because we haven't had that many male fan service shows. But I think aside from that, it's really just show versus show. Like, so I keep using Neptunian as an example because it's kind of fresher in my mind. But I mean, that show has a lot of fan service. But when we marketed it, we talked more about, you know, there are these cool console girls and there's all these in jokes with video game fans and also a lot of tie-ins. I guess the reason people like the games, in other words. So, you know, you don't always use the same one size fits all model in marketing different shows just because they haven't had fan service in them.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's look, we don't need to like dance around it. If you put boobs on something, people click on it. Like, this is proven on our traffic as well. Like,
yeah. Now, if they actually buy it, that's the tricky part.
There you go.
You'll get someone to click through. But then you got to get them to convert in some form or fashion.
But yeah, I mean, just like the example I'm saying, like for Neptunia, we could have gone with something like, oh, their stats are stacked and like, look at that huge processing power or something like that. You know, we could have
gone. Those? Was that part of the meeting? Is that
just,
like, what
I just
about this?
That, honestly, I'm pretty proud of myself for that. but you know, like we could have gone that route, but it's just like through reading what people love about Neptunia, I was like, well, you know, I think that the reason people like it is more nuanced. You know, there's a lot of different stuff. I think the video games thing is honestly, like the in-jokes with that is honestly what people latch onto more because it's like a giant, like tons of like giant in-jokes and you're sort of part of this club when you can realize all these things. So that's, you know, that's what we went with and it was very successful. So I think it's just you take things on a case-by-case basis and see what people are gravitating towards.
Yeah, I think that's the lesson here today is everything's a case-by-case.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. No blanket statements. Everything's case by case.
Otherwise, robots could do our jobs.
I mean, that's not to say that it's impossible to get a picture of the market and the challenges that come up. I mean, yes, everything is case by case, but we're not really asking you to get that granular or split hairs that much.
Okay.
Like, it's just sort of general idea. Like, there, it's not like you go into your job and literally every single thing is completely its own unique thing and cannot be discussed in terms of any other project. Like, you are kind of, you're working on one medium, and so that there are general statements you can make about your line of work. I don't think that's...
There are definitely some best practices.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about here. So.
Yeah, I just want to make sure, you know, we're also being respectful to the fans and to the sure. properties, because if you make blanket statements like that, then people will be like, well, you know, what about... such and such, you know.
Yeah, and I totally understand it. It's just for, we're trying to expand our understanding of this stuff. And so it helps if, because if everything gets boiled down to, well, it's this one specific thing, like that, all it does is teach you that there are absolutely no best practices. Everything is really one unique thing. So that's kind of what I'm trying to avoid. Anyway, Duck Nuts wants to know if, I love that Twitter name. Who's the most, you might not know this, maybe this is more a question for the Dragon Ball brand manager, but the most valuable Dragon Ball Z character when it comes to marketing, besides Goku or Vegeta?
Oh, besides like, Goku.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, don't put Goku on the poster, guys. And Vegeta's not on the poster. Who's like the third, like number three well, goes on the poster?
Frieza right now.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, clearly.
Yeah, that's obvious.
Yeah.
It's not like you would put out a Dragon Ball thing that didn't have Goku on it. But I mean, is there like an easy third aside from like of the moment as there historically over the life of the franchise?
I think that the brand manager would probably know. Right, I mean, my guess would be probably not Yamcha. It's just a guess though. I don't know.
Maybe they think it's these so closely look. It looks like Goku and Gion. It's like, oh, maybe they'll just think it's Goku. Put Yamcha on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you guys made that Gundam announcement already?
No.
All of the simulcast announcements that we said that were not Seraph of the End, Noragami, or Arya Scarlet MOAA, those are all fresh for you.
Weird. Maybe it leaked, because I have someone in my timeline 2 hours ago asking me to ask you about having your first Gundam in your catalog.
Yes, the Japanese Facebook page for Gundam mentioned that it was going to be.
Oh, so it has been announced.
Yes.
Okay.
Just not by us. Until now.
Well, that's not... Okay, that's not... All right.
But by the time that this happens, like, people will...
Yeah.
Okay. So...
All right, just checking. I wanted to make sure that was a thing. Okay, we're going to talk about this in very broad terms, so I know you're allergic to broad generalizations.
We'll do our best.
I still want to talk about this. Somebody asked about the fan backlash against the dub script and casting for Free, specifically. We're talking about Free a lot today. It's weird. And in general, I just want to... In general... Funimation dubs over the last like year or so, you've caught some heat over some of the choices made in like broadcast dubs in terms of localization and things like that. Free specifically, I believe, was like this. Attack on Titan got some heat like this. Just localizations is a little too liberal, a little too American. Like it's internet references and stuff like that. You're obviously aware of this feedback, aware that there has been a lot of outcry. Any response to that? Any, like, well, we're going to take another look at that process? Or is it just, look, they're just doing their job and, you know?
I think we basically, yeah, we do see a lot of the fan feedback. If stuff is posted online, we do see the majority of it.
Right.
Not all of it, for sure, but, you know, what we can. And I think we do take feedback to heart and kind of marry that with what our processes are and if that or where it can fit in. Again, like we said, things have changed over a year. I mean, we've done these new processes, so there's always potential that stuff can adapt and evolve.
Right.
Whether it's what specifically, that's kind of up for question. But.
Okay.
I think one thing that's happening is that with broadcast dubs, with home video, when people get the home video product, the times that they're watching them are staggered, right? Because some people might watch it immediately. Some people might wait a little bit to watch it. Some people don't buy it day of and they watch it later. Whereas for broadcast dubs, we're getting a lot of people are watching it all at once because it's coming out weekly just because it's simulcast. So I think that's sort of why we're seeing a lot of fan feedback that's more concentrated as a result of the change in the process there.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, that's as good an answer as I think we can really expect. Let's see here. So somebody's asking, Kid Tick is asking, as an international fan, he's noticed that simuldubs are very popular with new fans, and he plans to expand those rights more internationally. So, like in the UK, they can watch simuldubs.
I think we can say right now that we will be announcing concrete plans about international expansion in early 2016. So we don't have anything to announce now, but we can announce that we will announce, I guess, later on more information about international expansion.
Okay. And the final question, he wants to know if there's any thought about maybe an Oscar campaign for Best Animated Feature for Boy and the Beast.
As the Boy and the Beast brand manager here, I can say we have nothing we can announce on that front right now. There's just not anything concrete there that we can go ahead and say at all. It's a great film. I've seen it. Obviously, it's beautiful. It made me cry. And I want to say that it's very high caliber. We're seeing a lot of reviews and stuff saying, some people are even saying this is Hosoda's best film. I think that's, you'll have to watch it for yourself to decide for yourself on that. But in terms of something that specific, in terms of something like an Oscar submission, we don't have anything to announce right now.
Yeah, I'm not into that furry stuff, so I wouldn't know.
Sensitive trailer.
I'll tell you what, I watched, because we had that meeting the other day and I didn't have a chance to watch it yet. I watched it in 2 to 4x speed.
What?
And
what
are
you doing?
Because I wanted
Don't
to know.
I
didn't want the movie to be spoiled for me by the time I got to the meeting. So I did that and it was still an amazing movie. At 2 to 4x speed.
You need to take extra time and go back.
I know,
back and
I will.
Watch
I'm going
to
go back and
you
watch
should
it.
Watch it at half speed this time.
Yeah, right.
Just to counter that.
Oh, if we had the time. Okay, that actually wraps us up. I cannot. It was a pleasure and a delight having you both here. Thank you very much. I can't thank you enough for coming by.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Justin and Jennifer for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or a review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.